Hello, friends. This is Andy Atwell welcoming you to Come, Let Us Reason Together. This next half hour will be dedicated to putting the Bible back into its number one place in the hearts and minds of mankind. Throughout the centuries, the Bible remained the number one book sold. Only today has it taken a back shelf position in men's lives and minds. Even Christian bookstores have more books about the Bible than the Bible itself. The Bible is the only book written by God, and in it alone is found the pathway to life. Come now, let us reason together with Gilbert Larson and his friends.
Hello, everyone. Time to get your Bible and grab a cup of coffee. This is Gilbert from Red Bluff, California.
And this is Andy from Vancouver, Washington.
And this is Dan from Vancouver, Washington.
We are in the book of Luke. We're coming closer to the end of Luke.
Closing in on it.
Closing in.
And we're going to sing a song here. This is in Psalms 119, and it starts in verse 9.
How can a young man keep his way pure?
Keeping it according to your word.
With all of my heart I have sought you.
Do not let me wander from your commandments.
Your word I have treasured in my heart, that I may not sin against you. Blessed are you, O Lord. Teach me your statutes.
Teach me your statutes.
Teach me your statutes. With my lips I have told of
all of the ordinances of your mouth.
I rejoice in the way of your testimonies. As much as in all riches, I will meditate on your precepts and regard your ways. I shall delight in your statutes, and I shall not forget your
I shall not forget your
I shall not forget your word. And how can a young man keep his way pure?
By keeping it according to your word.
And with all of my heart I have sought you.
Do not let me wander from your commandments.
Do not let me wander from your commandments.
Thanks, Dan. You know what? The whole Bible is sung. We could break into a song any place. When you start reading through here, there's songs all throughout the Bible. As we've done this for 50-some years, it seems like it multiplies every year. And some years you've actually begged God for more songs. I remember two times we specifically asked God for more songs.
And more singers.
Yeah.
And more singers. To sing those songs.
Yeah. Yes. And it's changed. And there are more singers.
It's happened.
And while we were here, Brett got a song, a brand new song.
He strummed something on the guitar over there. And I looked at him like this. And I go, that's a new song. And I just said, and I got up and walked out of the room. He hadn't even started it yet. I didn't know what it was going to be. It was just, it was notes. And I heard how it hit, and I go, that's a new song. And he goes, so he came back and sang it. It was good.
Anybody remember where we were? We were in Luke, like, 22?
I think we're in verse 39.
22:39?
Oh, maybe not.
We stopped off at verse 24.
24. Yes. Well, we started. Well, 23. We'll start in 24.
Right. 23.
And go to 34.
Okay. And a contention also arose among them as to which of them was accounted to be greater. And he said to them, "The kings of the nations lord it over them, and who have authority over them are called benefactors. Not so you, however, but the greater among you, let him become as the younger, and who is chief as he that serves. For who is greater, who sits at the meat or the one who serves? Not who sitteth at the meat,
but I am in the midst of you as one who serves. But you are they that I have continued with me in my trials, and I appoint unto you, even as my Father appointed unto me, a kingdom that you may eat and drink at my table in the kingdom, and shall sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Simon, Simon, those Satan demanded to have you, to sift you as grain, but I made supplication for thee, that thy faith fail not. And when once thou hast turned again, establish thy brethren. And he said to him, Lord, with thee I am ready to go both to prison and death. And he said, I tell thee, Peter, the cock shall not crow today until shalt thrice deny that thou knowest me.
Until thou shalt three times deny that you know me. Wow. That hasn't happened yet. The Feast of Unleavened Bread is drawing near, the Passover feast, and this is the last days, the last day before Jesus is delivered up. Here again, a contention arises as to who's greater. This has been going on, hasn't it?
It's like the third time it's come up.
Competition. You know, competition really is a unity killer. Did you see The Boys in the Boat, Dan?
I did, yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
They became one. And it was the hard times they went through. I believe that we are coming to a time, it says it's not going to be like any other time. It's going to be the hardest time ever that we're coming into. Can you see the buildup to it? I mean, look what's happening in America. And it is going to be a time that lawlessness will increase. And because of that, most people's love will grow cold. Can you imagine living in a neighborhood where God's love has grown cold? Where love is, and a darkness will prevail? You know, it seems dark here sometimes in the Northwest, but people being dark too is, and it's happening more and more that people are separating themselves from each other because of politics and over some of the dumbest things sometimes, you know, like how you use a particular word. And all, you're going to fight over a word? What happened to forgiveness? God is two things. He is truth and he is merciful. He is forgiving. And Satan is untruth. He's a liar and he's an accuser. God is a forgiver. Satan is an accuser. And all the way through, you can see where Jesus turns the other cheek and doesn't engage. And they want to kill him. And he still slips out of their hands. He can't die until the time appointed of the Father. He has to. He's the Passover lamb. The only time he's going to die is at that very hour when the Passover lamb is sacrificed. He cannot go a minute before, a minute after. It has to be the specific time that God has allotted that Passover lamb is to be sacrificed. It has to be on the right day, the right hour, exactly the right time.
The logistics of that are amazing if you think about it, because all the moving pieces involved with his being killed, for it all to happen in that hour.
Did you notice he's all over the place? I mean, from the time he starts his ministry, he is constantly moving. He starts in Capernaum and in Galilee and Jerusalem, and he's constantly moving around. Then he goes back up to Samaria, and he even slips out of the country once and goes to Tyre. But he doesn't take the disciples with him. He goes outside the country only one time. And what was that about? I really don't know. But I know there's a reason in it. Maybe 5 years from now, we'll read and we'll see exactly.
It'll be sitting there.
He'll tell us why he slipped out that one time.
He'll at least show a couple of us.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
He'll maybe a 12-year-old kid yeah. will see it.
Did you know this?
Yeah. No. We got our nose stuck in other things here, too. So there's just a lot of interesting things as he walked the same places where Israel, he lived. You know, like how Israel went into Egypt and lived? So his parents took him as a baby and brought him out and brought him to Galilee, and later on he left Nazareth and left his parents and had a house at his house. It even makes that statement, he was at his house. It says that directly. So where does nonsense come about him not having a house? Except for the statement was made about him, he really didn't have a house. His home was not on the earth. It was with God. He is temporary. But he seemed to keep coming back to Jerusalem, to Judea. And in these last days, he's here a lot. And he's early in the morning, the crowds wanted to go hear him teach. And they were hanging on the words he was saying. They were hanging on those. And the religious leaders, they weren't liking it one bit. They were all leaving the church and were following Christ. Until his death, then all forsook him, even his 12, and the one especially became a traitor. But his disciples forsook him. Even Peter did, who denied it, said he wasn't going to do that. Even he did it 3 times before the rooster crowed. So what stood out to either of you in that context?
Just that he says in verse 26, this is not the way with you, but the one who is the greatest among you must become like the youngest and the leader like the servant. How great Jesus was, yet he came and served.
Exactly the opposite of the religious leaders.
Exactly the opposite.
They wanted to be the chief poobah. In one of my positions at Centennial Engineering, even though they hired me to manage the survey department, right-of-way survey and so on in all the western states. So I had to be licensed there. And they gave me a title as chief of surveys. And I said, I don't like that title. I don't like a title. Can we not do that? And they had no clue. They wanted to give me a title chief. For some reason, you know, like I'm like an Indian chief, but that which tribe had chiefs? Was it the Edomites that they called their leaders
chief?
It was
the son, you know.
Which one?
Esau,
right.
His sons. Edomites had chief so-and-so. Yeah, chief, it went all the way down the page.
Chief Puba or whatever.
Yes.
And can you imagine a person, you know, in the world, people like those titles, and I'm going, I don't want that on a business card. Just put my name on there, if you would, please. And they're scratching their heads. So people like to be chief. They like to be competitive because there's going to be always people in an engineering firm or whatever that's always going to do certain things better than you do. Why are you the chief? For some reason, I just did not, and I don't remember reading this, it just didn't ring a bell with me like I like that title at all. How about not a title? But it separates people as to value or whatever. And with love, love is very interesting. It levels the playing field. And sometimes there are people that really don't have any distinction in a company that are really the most valuable. And sometimes they're overlooked a lot. They're just taken for granted and they're overlooked. You ever known people like that? Here's this person that day in, day out. And
they're like the glue.
They are. So a title doesn't do that. A title actually takes away from that.
No, I noticed in this chapter here, on the third verse, we had a name mentioned, and here on the 31st verse, we have that same name mentioned again. And Jesus said to Peter, he said, Simon, Simon, he doubled his name here, and he says, lo, Satan demanded to have you. Now, he's demanding to have Simon to sift you as grain. And Jesus intervened. He says, I made supplication for you that your faith would not fail, because Satan wanted to stop Peter. He recognized him.
Now, his name Simon came from his parents,
right.
His man-given name. And Peter comes from the name Jesus gave him.
Right.
His new Petrus. Attribute as being part of the rock, a chip off the rock.
And he calls him Simon, Simon here.
Yes. He goes back to that.
He calls him Simon, Simon. I have made supplication for you that your faith not fail. In other words, he prayed for him that his faith not fail. That means his faith was not going to fail.
Then he goes on to call him Peter.
Yeah. And when you have, that your faith wouldn't fail, and when you have turned again, establish thy brethren. So he was going to stumble around. So when you watch Peter after this, right now, after you watch him, you'll notice, you go, I wonder why he did that. It's because Satan was messing with him and wanted to have him to sift him. But Jesus prayed for him. Sifting means that he was going to stop him altogether. But Jesus prayed that his faith wouldn't fail. So here's Satan. He wanted to go after, he got after Judas, and then he wanted to have Peter. So he's attacking the apostles here.
We're going to take another look at Peter when we get into the book of Acts. We're going to take several looks at him. Even along the way, we're going to take a look at him immediately when the big change comes to all these disciples. We're going to look at him later on in his ministry where there's some rubbing going on between him and a newer apostle. And then at the end, we're not done with this.
He's in here to show we really get to see what Peter looks like.
But the change hasn't yet come in him, so you can see where he's still Simon, Simon. But Jesus looking ahead to when there's going to be a transformation where he is going to change and calls him his new name that he'll be known for in the New Testament, Peter. But we'll get to that when we get into the book of Acts.
And back in Matthew, he told him, and you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the keys to the kingdom of heaven
were given to Peter.
Were given to Peter. And so he was that point there. Here he's still. He's calling him Simon, Simon, like he hasn't gotten to that other realm yet.
But he's not the rock. Jesus is the rock. He is a piece of the rock. And yet, Jesus is the rock with the keys. Jesus is the rock. He has the keys, and he gives those keys to Peter. And right away, Peter steps out of bounds. And we went through that. And you're going to see that this is going to happen to all believers, that there will be times when we do well, and there will be times when we'll need encouragement from our brothers to keep us in line, and also from the Lord. He's always going to be changing us, and for good.
And we're not above being attacked.
Being attacked and being corrected by the Lord.
Being corrected by the Lord, being attacked by the enemy. This is a straight on
connect. Enticed by the enemy.
Enticed.
Satan wanted to sift you.
And by lying and deceiving. It's his tools.
Here we go is the next one in verses 35 to 38. Here come some instructions and things that we need to do in our journey.
And he said to them, when I sent you forth without purse and wallet and shoes, lacked you anything? And they said nothing. And he said to them, but now, who has a purse, let him take it. Likewise, always a wallet. And he who has none, let him sell his cloak and buy a sword. For I say unto you, that this which is written must be fulfilled in me. And he was reckoned with the lawless. Yea, what concern me hath fulfillment. And they said, Lord, lo, here are two swords. And he said to them, it is enough.
David North came up with this
one. I knew you were going to do that.
Did you?
Well, sure. I was there.
The two swords. Well, you explained it then.
Well, no, go ahead. No, this one, and I'll tell you where it was, and you do it. It was up in Bremerton. We were having a men's meeting, and we were talking about the swords and all this, and David stood up, and he said, what? God.
He said he knew what the two swords were.
And I went, what are you talking about, David?
And one is the word of God is a sword, But there's two words of God. One is the Rhema, the Bible, the whole of the Bible. And then the Logo is the part of the Bible that specifically tells us about the bone structure of the body of God, Jesus Christ. The Logo is the image of Jesus.
So one's in Ephesians, the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, and the other one is sharper than any two-edged sword.
Hebrews 4.
Rightly dividing soul and spirit. And that's what David said, and we all went like this, didn't we? Go, well, that's interesting. No, that was a long time ago.
So there's two types of words. One is the fundamental truths, the structure of what God is all about, the foundation truths, and how we become Christ-like. It's the bones. Did you know that your bone structure is what makes your face look the way it does? Above all features, they know how much fat and tissue is on each part of your face. And so because that's already measured, they can take a skeleton and add flesh to it.
Oh, we make it recreate. Yeah.
Pretty much looks like that person. When they do it, they go, find, oh, well, that's this person. So the bones or the foundation principles that show us what Jesus is like is the logo, the image. Like we have a logo, you know that Nike, if you got the swoosh, you know it's Nike Corporation. And Rhema is the whole of the Bible. But some parts are directed us right to how we become Christ-like.
Be like him.
To be exactly like him. His stature, his character, the truth that is in him.
Now, Dan, have you heard that before about the two swords?
I was there too.
But you were there too.
I forgot it until you said it.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. Here's a little song for you. This is Hebrews 4. For the word of the Lord is living and active and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing as far as division of soul and spirit and joints and marrow, and able to judge the thoughts and intentions of the heart. And there is no creature hidden from his sight, but all things are open and laid bare unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do.
That almost sounds like a cantor, you know.
It is a cantor.
Doesn't it?
It does.
The Jewish.
It feels like it.
That was a cantor, yeah.
I don't know what the word cantor means.
This means what the Jews sang like.
They sang the Bible.
You sound like a Jew singing. Okay. You are a Jew singing.
Yeah. That was exactly what I saw. And he came out and went according to his custom unto the Mount of Olives, and the disciples also followed him. And when he was at the place, he said to them, pray not to enter into temptation. And he was parted from them about a stone's throw. And it depends on how far a person can throw a stone. Me right now, in my old age, he was 2 feet away, but I'm sure
20 yards.
I'm sure there was a definite separation, right?
50 yards.
Maybe, yeah. So we won't use me as an example. Yeah. And he was parted from them about a stone's throw, and he knelt and prayed, saying, Father, if you will, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. And an angel appeared to him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly. And his sweat became as if great drops of blood were falling upon the ground. He was going to take the sins of all the world on him. And God was going to turn his back. He knew all this in advance. Mm-hmm. And when he rose from prayer, he came unto the disciples and found them sleeping for sorrow, and said to them, why sleep you? Rise and pray that you enter not into temptation. I can see that sleeping for sorrow. When I lost Carolee, I slept a lot. I'd sleep 12 hours.
It's exhausting. You were exhausted.
When I was like 19, my granddad died. I slept like 20 hours. They go, can you get up? I said, I can't get up. And then I just snapped out of it. But I mean, that literally happened to me. It only happened one time, but that happened to me.
My grandson had a loss. and he slept a lot. And it was sorrow.
Yeah.
You know, you don't think about these things, that that's a natural defense mechanism to deal with loss.
I wonder if his stone's throw is just far enough away that they couldn't hear him praying.
I think that's what it's really saying. So he was privacy for him for prayer. That's what my guess is too, Dan. I think you're absolutely right. Why sleep you, rise and pray, you enter not into temptation.
Now, when's the last place that an angel was in this story with Jesus? Before this, I got to go all the way back when he was where?
Back with Mary.
No, I mean, didn't he go into the wilderness and he was baptized?
He was led by a...
And the angels
ministered to him.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't there another place? But maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. I'm thinking that's what I was asking.
Yeah.
Just from what we've known, it's been a while. And here, an angel come and ministers to him here. Where he was being in the wilderness, he was attacked. And now he's under attack again. And here comes an angel ministering to him.
Well, he's going to go through the
most. And strengthening him.
He's right going here. To go through the most horrid thing that he has ever experienced. You know, we each have sins, and if you had to deal with all of them, you had to carry them right now, it would crush you. And now he's going to take all of mankind's.
And have to become that.
Yeah.
He became that, right?
Yeah.
He became sin, him who knew no sin. So... It's not just the physical situation, it's that.
At least the sins, did it say the sins of the world? Is that, those specific people that have repented, those ones for salvation? Or the sum total that he's able to save? Anyway, it's enough to save everybody. I think this is a bit beyond our comprehension, what he really went through. And him who knew no sin became sin for us.
Mm-hmm. It's a big, big picture.
Yeah. And God turned his back on him too. So he dies of a broken heart when they stuck the sword into him.
And out came water. Alone.
And blood, and died alone.
He had to go this alone.
Yeah.
At a certain point, he had to go this alone.
Can you imagine a whole world turned against him? Even his disciples all turned their back on him. Peter denies him.
Ran off. The only people that were there were from a distance, and they were a whole group of women. They were at a distance.
It seems like during all of this, it seems like the women all did the best.
They were in the thick of it.
Yeah. And they were close. But the guys were, just figure this whole thing out. You would think the strongest would be the strongest, but. Well, we'll continue on in Luke chapter 22. And until we meet again, may God lead you into all truth.
You can contact Gilbert and his friends at www.gilbertandfriends.com. That's www.gilbertandfriends.com. Or write to him, Gilbert and Friends, P.O. Box 820347, Vancouver, Washington 98682. That's P.O. Box 820347, Vancouver, Washington 98682. Or call us at 360-600-6726. That's 360-600-6726. We invite your comments as we reason together through the Bible. Thank you for joining us on Come Let Us Reason Together and reminding you all to eat a healthy breakfast every morning. Our favorite breakfast is the Bible because it is written, "Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God."